welcome to Rewatchable number 62, aka the Karen and Danielle Love Fest. Today, we'll be talking about Pushing Daisies episodes 11, Window Dressed to Kill, and 12, Water and Power. I'm Danielle, and so presumably the other half is Karen. Hi, Karen.
That would have been really funny if it wasn't me and it was just still the Danielle and Karen Love Fest.
That would be weird, but that could happen. We were supposed to have a few other people on here today, but Kyle got called into work and Christine actually hurt herself while horseback riding. So we're wishing a speedy recovery for her. So we'll be thinking about her during our Love Fest.
Yes, please tweet her and tell her to get better soon.
Yes. And if you would like to tweet us after you finish tweeting her, please do her first. She's more important. You can reach us at re_watchable. You can also email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. And you can comment on this post on hypeable.com. We're always looking at them, always looking to respond to all of our listeners. We want to hear what you have to say. We want to hear if you agree with us, disagree with us, want to yell at us. Anything. We want to hear it. So our first episode for this podcast is episode 11. Again, that's called Window Dressed to Kill. Karen, did you want to read that synopsis I wrote?
Sure. I haven't read it yet, so hopefully it's... Okay. When Olive's childhood kidnapper friends break out of jail, she takes it upon herself to help them flee across the border. Since Ned gave up touching people, he has nothing else better to do but eat pies and help her. Things get awkward when Ned finds out that she's been lying to her kidnapper dads about her relationship with him, and so the two act coupley until Olive reaches her senses. She tells Ned off for using her as something he's just trying on, which later causes him to realize that he may have some sort of jealousy toward Olive and David Arquette's new relationship. In other news, fancy department store window dressers are dropping dead, and it's up to Emerson and his new sidekick to solve the murder without poking the dead. They do it and look fabulous while doing so, even before Ned runs in, hijacks the investigation, touches dead bodies, and declares he's back in business.
Is that everything that happened? I hope so.
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I wanted to hit all of the major points before we broke it down here. Let's start with the kidnappers, because I thought that was a really interesting twist. I've never kind of seen that before, where she wanted to be kidnapped.
Yeah. I was really surprised that she hadn't actually been kidnapped, although I did notice when, because they kind of did this thing where they shot certain scenes in the beginning, but they cut out parts so that you didn't know exactly what was going on. And I kind of noticed that the one guy looked surprised when he turned around and saw her in the car. And I was like, okay, that's kind of strange. Like, obviously, she was in the car already, and maybe they just decided to kidnap her afterwards or something. But when it was revealed that they actually had this amazing relationship and that they really liked each other and she had been talking to them for 25 years while they were in jail, I was surprised, but I was really happy. I thought it was a good twist, and it was nice that they didn't end up being the bad guys.
Yeah, it was something I've never seen before, and I actually really liked those guys, because one of them is the grandpa on the Goldbergs, and he makes me laugh every time I see him, and so it was really nice to see him in another role.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I liked it. It was fun. What else? Her parents seem awful. just putting it out there, and yeah. I probably would have wanted to do something of the same sort, I would think. I don't know if I would actually go through with it, but I would probably want to do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame Olive, because her parents, I don't know if they didn't care about her at all. I mean, that's pretty harsh, because when you have a kid, like, you have some sort of feelings for them most of the time, even if you're not crazy about being a parent. I mean, and obviously she was well looked after. She was neglected, but it wasn't like they were starving her or abusing her or anything like that, physically or mentally. I mean, neglect kind of is a form of abuse, but it could have been a lot worse. And so, I don't know. I don't blame her for wanting to run away. I think it really sucks that her parents felt that way about her.
Yeah. Are there any good parents in this show?
I was trying to think that.
I feel like we asked the same question when we were doing Veronica Mars. And
I mean, Emerson's mother is pretty good. They have a good relationship. I mean, she kind of brought him up to be a little conniving, but she cares about him a lot.
That's a good point. That's true. And I get, like, and Chuck's dad is hard to read because there's, like, that whole background to him that we don't know anything about.
Yeah.
But he was good to her when she was a kid at the same time. So, I don't know.
And but. I guess Ned's mom seemed like a good person. It's like all the parents died.
That's so sad.
For maybe Emerson's mom. I guess she's still alive, but
yeah. Well, don't jinx it, Karen.
That's what's going to happen in the season finale.
Oh, God. The series finale, technically.
Yeah, that's true.
That'd be terrible. Oh, goodness. So, I don't know about you, but I wasn't really surprised at all that Olive was writing to these kidnapper dads that she was dating Ned. Because she always seemed slightly delusional in that way, and I guess it would make them happy if she was happy in that way. But I like how it kind of blew up more in Ned's face than it did in hers when they showed up at the pie hole.
Yeah, definitely.
But he went along with it, which...
Should he have?
That's where I struggle with this. I don't know. Because, yes, she is a friend, and he should try to, like, help her in ways that she needs it. But it seemed, I don't know, even with the reveal at the end where he was jealous of her, even when he first started helping her, it wasn't exactly clear if he was helping her because she was a friend or because he was just trying things.
Yeah, I kind of saw it as him being a little selfish because I completely understand why he's jealous because she's liked him for so long and that's kind of been a constant in his life, even though he hadn't necessarily felt that way about her. You know, as soon as she takes her eyes off of him, that kind of leaves him with this void, and I could understand him being jealous about that. I don't necessarily think that means that he has genuine feelings for her. Even if he does kind of like her, I don't think it's anything near what he feels for Chuck. So I feel like this, him doing this was his selfish way of, one, yeah, trying her on and seeing what a normal relationship would feel like, but two, kind of like reeling her back in and trying to get her to maybe feel those feelings for him again. And I think that was just a really, really horrible thing to do after they had talked about everything and been like, look, I don't really like you. I know you like me, but we're just friends and I'm in love with Chuck and this is kind of how it has to be. And Olive has been trying to get over him, but him doing this to her kind of set her back to square one, I think.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. And I actually watched these episodes, I think, in reverse order. So like I got to the damn one first and I was surprised that she was still feeling like this strong about it, but I don't know. And who knows if he would have even helped if he had been off with Emerson in the beginning. So, which again, I understand how he felt bad about his powers sort of, but at the same time, it was kind of selfish for him to not use his powers if it was helping people.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of irresponsible of him that he can help save people's lives and help bring closure to families, and he's not doing it. And I realize that it obviously causes a lot of issues and it's a lot of pressure on him, but he's already been doing it. He knows the rules. He knows what he needs to do to keep everything in line. And I think when something big happens, like Chuck tricking him into keeping her father alive, first of all, that was out of his hands, but you know, you can't, like, as soon as things get tough, Ned tends to like start going in the other direction. And I think that he needs to sort of just buck up and stick with it, because what he can do is amazing and incredible, and he needs to continue doing that.
Yeah, and like we've seen different, I guess, reactions from him when things get tough. Like we get the acid reflux or whatever it was with magic.
And so random.
It was really random. It's kind of weird. But yeah, I thought that it was strange. Like I knew he was going to go back to it. I'm not sure.
Otherwise, like there's no show.
Yeah, well, pretty much. But him being like him touching a rhino and then kind of like following a rhino out of the van was pretty awesome though. So I'm glad it kind of led to that scene because I really enjoyed the rhino.
Me too. It was so random. I loved it.
And then Randy Mann was like, man, I thought it was dead.
He felt so guilty.
Nobody questions it that they were possibly riding in a van with a live rhino, even though they weren't. I don't know.
It was funny. And Aunt Lily was just like, I'm going to bed.
So Randy Mann, let's skip around a little bit because we're talking about him. What do you think of Randy Mann? I was just going to say, I think he's kind of simple, but I think he's simple in a way that Ned is not. And that could be good for Olive because I feel like he could say what he feels. And also his name is Randy Mann.
I love Randy Mann. I think he's so awesome. And you're right. He is really simple. But Ned is so complicated and he has so many secrets and so many tics that I think, that would just confuse Olive and make things a lot harder for her. Whereas, yeah, he's really simple. He can just kind of say how it is. And that's sort of what she needs. And it's funny, actually, now that we've already made a comparison to Veronica Mars, but I feel like Randy Mann is a lot like Piz. And, you know, Piz was so simple and kind of straightforward about everything. And he was really good for Veronica, even though it wasn't necessarily what she wanted and maybe even what she needed at times. But I feel like for Olive, Randy Mann is definitely who she needs. And I'm really glad that she's starting to realize that she actually does have feelings for him.
Yeah, it was... I really like that they brought him back because I liked his character when we first saw him. And
can you remind me of when we first saw him? Because I wasn't sure if he had been on before.
It was, I know I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think it was the taxidermy episode. Or not the, like the one where people would hire friends. I want to say it was like maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago. Basically, there was a company that would hire out friends to people because they wanted friends.
Oh.
And so this guy was a friend of one of the friends that died.
Oh, that's right. He was the roommate.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Totally, totally remember him now. Thank you.
Yeah. For sure. The other thing I wanted to talk about this plotline was that Olive put Ned in his place, which was awesome.
Oh my God.
And so you put in here, the entire population of the planet Earth is a fist pump, which is so true because it was great. I love seeing Olive stick up for herself because she is like a strong, independent woman. And this is a nice reminder of that because we don't get to see her kind of sticking up for herself or talking about things other than Ned or secrets a lot. So yeah. This is really, really cool.
She's been pining after Ned for so long. And I realize that's part of her character, even though she does have other plot lines and other things going on with her. That's a major focus of who she is and the role that she plays in the show. And when they kind of flip it on its head like this, because she has gotten angry before in the past, and she's kind of gotten over it pretty quickly and gone back and forth, and she's always sort of come back to admitting that she still loves Ned. And I feel like this was the one time she genuinely got angry at him because he was kind of being a selfish jerk. And she put him in his place, And I think he realized that, which is really important, that what he was doing was wrong. And it was just so, so great to see her, first of all, just admit the truth to everybody, because that's one of the things that I hate about, like, one of the tropes that you see so much is one person lies and they have to keep up the lie and other people get brought in for that. And then that's the whole point of the episode, is this lie that you're still trying to continue on. And it gets really frustrating and old really, really quickly. So when Olive just said, look, we're not together, you know, all of this was wrong and stuff, and at that point, Ned kind of was able to think about other things as well and decide that he was going to use his power and he was going to be who he is and not try to just be normal, because he's not normal. So it was really good for both of them, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I know you put this question in here for a little later, but we can bring it up now. Do you think comparing himself to Superman, though, like, is that going a little too far?
That kind of bothered me. I mean, I get the whole idea of he's got this front to most people where he's Clark Kent. He's the normal guy. He's a little bit bumbling and he's just, you know, average Joe. And then he has this power that he has to hide from most people. And so, I mean, the comparison is a good one. It makes sense. But he kept bringing up the fact that, like, he was Superman and that he just wanted to be like the man, and but now he wants to be the Superman again. And it was like, it felt a little conceited to me, although I got what they were trying to say with that metaphor.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's almost not fair for him to keep calling himself Superman, because he's not. More often than not, he's not saving people. He's solving murders, which is a little bit different. Yes, he could save people by solving a murder, by making sure that the murderer doesn't, like, kill any more people. But he's not outright, like, saving the city or stopping an evil force.
And, I mean, he does it for money, too. I mean, it's not like he's that great of a guy. I mean, he's doing something that's sort of on the line of being illegal with some of the things that they have to, like, lie about and stuff. So I feel like, I don't know. Yeah, it's just a little too much to believe that he's Superman.
A little bit. So even though we weren't huge fans of Ned not using his powers in this episode, I have to say that I was actually kind of happy to not have him in the mystery of the week, because it wasn't as easy as usual. Like, it wasn't like, okay, touch this person, find out how they died, and then figure it out from there. I really liked seeing Emerson and Chuck working together and working from the ground up, using their set of skills instead of depending on Ned to use his first and then trying to go from there.
Yeah, I always love it when Chuck and Emerson get to work together, because in the beginning, Emerson had wanted nothing to do with her. And now she kind of tags along and he's cool with it. And she does help out a lot. And she's got this quality about her that I think really goes well with Emerson, because Emerson can be a little gruff and cold, and she cares about people and their stories. And so I think that where Emerson lacks in those people skills, she really makes up for it. And so they make a good duo. But this this episode actually might be my favorite episode so far. I really liked the Norwegians. That one was so good. But I think this one might even top it. And I think a big part of that was the actual mystery of the week, which is funny because most of the time, I really only care about the characters and how they're progressing and growing as people. And the mystery of the week usually, like, enhances that. I mean, that's the reason why they come to certain decisions and do certain things and how they grow as people. But I felt like this mystery was actually just really interesting and kind of funny, and I didn't really know who the killer was, and it was surprising and interesting. So I really like this episode as a whole.
You know, I feel the same way about the mystery of the week. I mean, part of the reason why I really liked it was because, this sounds bad, but because Ned wasn't there, because they had to kind of use other skills. But also, I found myself interested in finding out who did it and why. A lot of times in this show, I haven't been interested in the motivations or even the murderer himself. But I thought it was so visually appealing, for one, and just interesting in the way that the windows would mirror the murders, and I don't know, it was really interesting for me too.
Yeah, I totally agree. Were you shocked, by the way, when the girl was like cut in half by the escalator?
I feel like, even though we've seen some weird sort of deaths, I feel like that one was the most visceral, graphic, like awe-inducing one.
Oh my god, it was so gruesome. Like, I actually like screamed a little, and not because I can't handle blood and gore, because I really like darker shows and stuff.
Right.
But it, when you are watching Pushing Daisies, you don't expect to see this girl like literally cut in half, blood everywhere at the top of the escalator, and it was so surprising. I'm really shocked that they went in that direction.
I know, and she was kind of like positioned on the escalator, and she was kind of like sideways leaning, and it was, oh my god. Like, we've seen a guy fall into a vat of hot oil, and he came out looking like a piece of chicken with like cornflakes on him. And so, like, otherwise, like, if that wasn't in Pushing Daisies world, that would be terrible looking. It would be awful. So to see this, which is, I don't want to say less awful, but it's on a different level. But to see it more, as you said, gruesome, was really jarring, but in a good way, I guess. I wasn't expecting it, but I kind of enjoyed seeing this lady be cut in half.
I really liked how later she like went to feel her legs and she was like, where'd they go? That was kind of funny.
That was. I liked that too. But yeah, I liked this mystery of the week. I haven't been on board with a lot of them, but I was on board with this one. Let's see. Did we miss anything in this episode? I think we hit it all for the most part, unless there's anything else you have to say about this one.
I don't think so. I think that was all of the main points.
Yeah. It's weird with two people. We just go fast.
I know.
And then we agree on a lot of things. So it's,
yeah,
not even fighting you. So then let's move into our favorite scenes and favorite lines. Would you like to start with your favorite scene?
Sure. And I mean, we already talked about this a lot, and I know that your favorite line goes with this one as well. But
yes,
it's when Olive stands up to Ned and says that she doesn't appreciate him, quote unquote, helping her. And yeah, I mean, there isn't really too much more to say about it. It was just so great to see her stand up for herself and be strong. And especially since it was Ned. I mean, Ned is like her kryptonite, if we're going to keep going with the Superman theme. And,
yep,
you know, she stood up to him anyway and really put him in his place. And it was just really wonderful to see her do that.
My favorite scene is like an opposite in tone from you, like complete opposite. But I loved it when Chuck and Emerson were outside of the window. I think it was after when they were investigating the first murder and they had the crowd there. And Chuck goes through the crowd pretending to be different crowd members and tries to get like the mob mentality started. on it was a murder, we have to solve it, we have to hire Emerson Ka. And she's just like running in between everybody, putting on different voices and be like, yeah. And it really made me laugh. I enjoyed that a lot.
That was almost the one that I put down, just so you know, because it was so good.
Because it was her being silly, but it was her showing her skills too.
Yeah, and Emerson was just like, you've got to be kidding me.
But he was impressed by the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she has a different set of skills. Like, you, I think she would be someone that I would kind of blow off or kind of like look past. But her skills can be helpful if put in the right place or, yeah, I don't know.
And I like how she kept calling herself the Alive Again Avenger. I thought that was awesome. That's such a good
Yes. Name. It was wonderful. I loved it. What was your favorite line, Karen?
Mine was from Ned, and it's when he says, "I can eat my own pie. I'm going to get fat, aren't I?" And it wasn't even the line. It was his face that was like this awe. He was totally awed and so excited about being able to eat his own pie. It was the best thing ever.
That was really cute. I liked that. So like you said, my favorite line went with your favorite scene. And it was from Olive. And she goes, "Try on. You try on a sweater at the mall. You try on your best friend's bra and you smile on the inside because yours are bigger and better. You don't try on a person."
So true. And the bra thing is so true too.
That's kind of what hooked me, because I think I was multitasking, I think. And I heard that and then I started paying attention and then I went back and listened to it again because I really liked that part of the line. But
yeah.
So good. All right. So then let's move into episode 12, which is Water and Power. Would you like to read that synopsis?
I absolutely would. Lila Robinson, a beautiful grifter from Emerson's past, resurfaces because she's on the hook for murder. Why? Because she had a previous relationship with a deceased damn man and was the last one seen with him before he died. Did we mention that this Lila figure ditched the damn man to be with Emerson and is Emerson's baby mama? Now on the lam for murder, Lila promises Emerson a quid pro quo if he clears her name. He gets a little help from his dominatrix doggy lady friend, which was awesome. The murderer ends up being a flower guy who is freeloading with his water intake. Emerson stupidly gets duped by Lila again and doesn't get to meet his daughter. I mean, come on, we all saw what was coming except for the PI. Psh. Also, they say the word damn a lot in this episode. Damn. And I have to give a total shout out to Kyle, who should have been here, by the way, and should have said damn girl like 100 times because that is his favorite thing to say. So this one's for you, Kyle. Damn girl.
Damn, girl. I'm sorry. I had to throw it in there a lot because I loved that they said that the whole time. And they would say it in ways that, yes, it fit with like a physical damn, but it was also could be taken the other way. And it was a lot of fun.
I know. And at one point, Emerson like threw it right in the middle of a word. I don't even remember what he was saying, but it was so funny. And they're so good at the dialogue and the puns that they use on the show. It's definitely still one of the highlights.
Oh, I agree. I love it so much when they can throw in kind of more adult things or more adult appropriate things in this cartoony world, but disguise them in a way that makes them okay. It's like, we're saying damn, but we're talking about a physical damn, so you can calm down.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to need to walk me through this first point here because I don't know who this is.
Okay, no problem. Okay. Gina Torres played Lila, and Gina Torres is on Firefly, which I know you haven't watched yet.
Okay.
But it was kind of exciting for her to be back in the realm of rewatchable because she is definitely a fan favorite character on Firefly. She plays a completely different person. She's this really tough, really tough lady who is a soldier, and I guess there are some comparisons between her character and on Firefly and Lila, but she's definitely a good guy on Firefly, and it was just kind of exciting to see her return.
I like the way that they framed her in a lot of shots because she looked like the, what's it called? In noirs, there's not the damsel.
The femme fatale.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Like with her big hat and the way that split and her tiny gun.
Yep, I totally agree. I kept thinking that too.
I love that. Because I love noir looking things. And so that made me really happy.
I'm kind of sad that Caitlin's not on this episode because she's really into that as well. And I think she would have liked to discuss this part.
Definitely. So what did we think of Lila and Emerson? Kind of, I don't know if I could even see them together. Even in the flashbacks, it kind of seemed weird for them to be together. But I guess he does like more strong, dominating women. but I just kind of didn't see it.
I got it in the flashback a little bit when it seemed like she was being genuine, but it really, really, really makes me angry because do we have a reason why she doesn't want her daughter to be with Emerson at all?
I think she just left because she liked conning people, I think. And she didn't want to be tied down. I'm not exactly sure, but that's kind of what I'm assuming.
That's so selfish. And I feel like there are so many fathers out there who don't, you know, with a situation like this where, like, you're not married or it's an accident or whatever, they just don't care. They don't want the responsibility. And Emerson loves his kid so much, and he doesn't even know her, but he wants to get to know her so badly, and she's keeping Penny from him, and I feel like I don't even think she can come back from this in my mind. Like, I know we only have one more episode left, but if she all of a sudden turned around and was like, yeah, you know, here's your daughter, I would still hate her because this is the absolute worst thing that you could do to a person.
It was just awful. And it kind of even bothered me when the car pulled away and the daughter was totally on board.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame the daughter at all because she's young and she's probably just doing what her mother is telling her to do. But I feel right. like without a proper reason, like a proper reason, not just wanting to not be tied down, Lila, like, it just seems so dumb for her to keep Penny away from Emerson.
Yeah. I understand if she was a mother trying to keep her daughter away from danger, but she's not.
In a lot of ways, she's even worse than Emerson. I mean, Emerson is, he's kind of a con because he likes his money and he tries his best to get as much as he can, but he's not a bad guy by any means. And I feel like if you're comparing the two of them, she would be a lot worse. Like, her influence would be a lot worse on her daughter than his would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, and then, okay, she was completely transparent in that last scene where she's like, my car broke down and we're poor. Completely transparent. And I was just sitting there like, okay, I understand that at some point you love this lady and you can be kind of blind or your thought process can be a little messed up around her. Okay, fine. And you really want your daughter, so you're focused on that. But when it's this obvious, you're going to give away your car keys, not see Penny first, like before the mom even drives away. And it's not fishy that the mom is like, okay, you can have her. Like, those are just a few of the problems that I had with this scene, because I feel like Emerson is so much better character-wise than that. Yeah. Like, I feel like that can't be explained away by, oh, Lila makes him crazy or makes him blind to things.
I agree, especially when she was like, I knew I could always count on your big heart. Like, that would have been a flashing red sign for me.
Yeah. And like, she knew.
Yeah.
It was a thing she planned on.
Oh, yeah. And I think that we're meant to believe that, yeah, Emerson just kind of gets stupid when it comes to his daughter and Lila. But I think you're right when you say there's a point at which it's too much and it becomes unbelievable. And this was definitely that point.
Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, that man with the menacing face standing in front of you wielding a knife. Oh, he's not going to hurt you. Like, obvious. Red sign. Obvious. It just... I was on board with everything. I was on board with Lila's whole storyline and kind of Emerson not knowing what to do because he's really anxious about getting to see his daughter and everything. But that was the point where I kind of hit the brakes and I was like, ugh, not so much. So let's kind of go sort of the other way, because Simone and Lila have quite a few things in common, kind of personality wise, but she makes Emerson a little bit different of a person, and I really, really liked her in this episode.
Me too. I'm really glad you said that, because I wasn't sure, because she can be a little domineering, but I mean, that's obviously part of her relationship and her role on the show, but I really, really like her, and I'll talk about this a little bit later when I talk about my favorite line, but she cares about Emerson a lot, and I think that although Simone and Lila are very similar, that's the difference. Simone actually cares about somebody other than herself, and I think Lila does care about her daughter, but she might be the only other person that Lila cares about, whereas Simone, I think, has a little bit bigger of a heart, and although she can be really overpowering sometimes, she kind of means it in the best way possible. That's just sort of how she shows her affection.
Yeah, and I thought she was kind of super sketch in the Chinese restaurant episode, where she was like in with the gambling, and then I didn't know if we could trust her. But yeah. I really liked how in the span of, I don't know how long her scenes were total, but let's say less than like half hour, we got a lot of character development on her. Like how, you'll explain this with your lines, but like how she deals with threats or how she deals with certain situations. We know that she's big on trust. And it was just really nice to have her kind of lay those things out. And even when Emerson kind of, she gets all of these things from Emerson's past in her face, like she makes the decision to help. And I don't know.
Yeah. And I feel like that's big for her because like you said, trust is huge, and he lied to her, at least kept the truth from her. And although he didn't necessarily do it because he was hiding it, he just didn't know how to bring it up. And he felt a little uncomfortable saying that to her, you know, she forgave him in the end, and she understands why he did that. And I think that's a huge step forward for her.
Definitely.
And I also love, like, the flip side of this is Emerson, like, his relationship with her, in that he, when he first came in, she tried to click the clicker and it didn't work on him that time. And it was like, oh yeah, you know, I just love how he kind of waltzed up to her and kissed her. And it was like, it felt more like a genuine relationship rather than him being controlled or him being even awestruck by her power and everything. He was kind of able to override that. And it was just really nice seeing that between them.
Mm-hmm. And kind of while you just said the word power, everything kind of clicked into place for me. The whole water and power kind of mystery of the week actually fits relatively well with what was going on with Emerson and these two ladies in his life, because it's a balance of power. The whole thing is. So yeah. I didn't get that before, but I get that now. It's there. It's good. How did you feel about that kind of mystery of the week, really quickly, because I think we should touch on it a little bit. I don't know about you, but I was a little confused with what was going on with all like the piping and the, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't really, I mean, it was interesting. It was another good mystery of the week. Not as good as the last one, but I feel like a lot better than most of the mysteries. I actually did care about what was going on. And I think that was part of that was because it was so tied in with Emerson's story. A lot of the times these mysteries are kind of separate to what's going on and they affect the main characters, but they're not actually tied to them as people. And this one definitely was because Lila was right at the center of it. So I did care about this mystery of the week and I thought it was a good one. And I thought that the, you know, when you find out who actually did it, I thought that was pretty interesting because I felt like they set it up so that you were expecting it not to be Lila. She was super sketchy, but they definitely made it obvious that, yeah, she, even though she wasn't a very good person, she still wasn't the one that murdered him.
Agreed.
And so when you found out who it was, I thought that was interesting.
I did too. And I kind of liked the fact, I was like, how is she in these pictures? And I didn't think of someone actually dressing up as her, especially this like skinny, weird sort of white guy who's
like,
a gardener.
He pulled it off, though, man.
Pulled it off.
Even when he, like, you saw his face, like, he looked good with the long curly hair. And, like, he made it work.
It was a good look for him, for sure.
Yeah. The beard kind of threw off the whole thing a little bit, but, you know, we can let that slide.
It's all right. It's okay. I mean, everybody has their flaws, Karen. It's okay. But yeah, we didn't really touch on this, but Emerson and his love for his daughter has kind of grown, let's say. And especially in this episode, we saw it kind of make him crazy. And I like this part of Emerson.
Me too.
It shows like a more caring part. And I can see with your all caps in the doc that you love that he just wants to be a dad.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, there are a lot of dads out there that just do not care. And he cares so much, even though he's been away from his daughter for so long. And I think that's amazing. And, you know, we were talking before about a lot of the parents represented in this show are really crappy parents. Emerson's not. And he's technically, I mean, he's still a parent because it is his child, but he hasn't actively been Penny's parent because he hasn't been around her for 9 years or however long it's been. And, but he wants it so badly, and I think that he's always gruff and cold and witty and sarcastic on the outside, except when it comes to his daughter. And then you see this real raw emotion inside of him, and it's really kind of beautiful to see him care about something so much.
And I think we got a little bit of that, with the episode where he helps Chuck actually bury what's his name. Because he was like, I'm angry at you right now, but I'm going to help you. And in that moment, I kind of saw him treating her almost like a daughter figure.
Yeah. Because
the way he treats her then is very different from the way that he treats her when they're working a case or when she's annoying him with things about Ned.
Yeah.
So I really liked that.
Yeah, his relationship with Chuck, I think, is one of the best things that's come about from the show, just because in the beginning, he was like, no, you need to kill her again. Like, he wouldn't even call, I mean, I think he still calls her dead girl a lot, but it was definitely, now it's a little bit more endearing. Before, it was like, he didn't even want to know her name. He didn't want to know anything about her, didn't want to know her past with Ned. He was just like, you need to kill her again. This is ridiculous. And now, he actually does care about her as a person and cares about the stuff that she's going through. And I think that is really good in terms of the relationship, but just in terms of Emerson as a person, because we can see him open up a bit more about, you know, everything that he kind of takes in with this whole thing with Ned and everything that they go through. He isn't just this cold and gruff person who is super sarcastic. He has a heart, and it's really nice when you can see that.
I agree. And someone who we don't know if they have a heart or not, we haven't seen in a while, and that's Ned's father.
Ugh.
I wanted to be on the last episode of Rewatchable because I actually really liked those episodes and the fact that they had an overarching storyline. That is what I had wanted for so long, and I was so on board. And then I got to these two, and while I like these two, I watched them out of order, and it's kind of sad that it really didn't make a difference to me because there was nothing really in them that was overarching.
Why did you watch them out of order, by the way? Was it just an accident?
It was an accident. Yeah. Oh, okay. I had them both loaded on my computer, and I had the two tabs up, and I chose the wrong tab to start watching first. And then I was halfway through the episode when I realized what I did. And so I just finished it. And
you're just like, screw it. I'm just going to.
Yeah, pretty much. Otherwise, it's been too confusing. But I liked that overarching theme, and we saw Ned's father pop up in it because he was the one who was helping and not Chuck's dad. And I want to know if he has a heart. Like, I want to know why he always leaves, if that's like a fight or flight thing, kind of like Ned has. And I just want to know. Like,
Me
would
too.
be nice.
I have this like crack theory that he's some super secret agent and like he has to keep packing up and leaving the people that he loves in order to save them. But that's like me really reaching because one, I want another good parent on this show, but two, like I can't think of any reason why he would just get up and leave his kids time and time again. And I was really disappointed that he wasn't in either of these episodes because we have one episode left and there is a lot to wrap up in that single episode. And I don't know. I'm assuming at this point they knew they weren't going to get renewed for season three because usually that happens. They get a pretty good idea ahead of time whether or not, you know, they're going to be going on for the next season and how much they have to wrap up in the finale. So I assume they knew that they had to kind of put an end to all of these different threads in this last episode. And the fact that they didn't do anything with the story of Ned's father in 11 and 12 really surprised me. And it's really frustrating because I felt like they have a really good storyline here. And it's something that for Ned's sake kind of has to be taken care of. And I don't know if they can do that and give viewers satisfaction in a single episode.
I'm assuming from, because I run the Twitter, and so I'm always looking for people talking about Pushing Daisies, and like everyone always seems so devastated when they come to the end. So I'm assuming we're not going to be satisfied.
Oh, man.
I know. Spoiler alert, I guess. But the only reason I could see them not putting his dad in these episodes is because they were trying to sort of wrap up other storylines. Like in, not in this water one, but in the one before it, they were trying to deal with and sort of wrap up Olive and Ned. I'm assuming, right. Hopefully that's what that was an attempt to do that. And then in this one, they're trying to give a little bit of closure or at least like a pat on the back saying, hey, it's okay. It's going to be fine with Emerson and his daughter. Hopefully that was the plan. So I don't know. But I, on the other hand, I really can't see them wrapping up something that big and overarching in the finale that we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
Next week.
And it's,
I can't see it.
It's still like a 45 minute episode, right? Like it's not.
Yeah.
Because I know some finales are like double episodes and they'd be a little bit longer, but this is just a regular.
I don't think so. I think it's normal. I haven't heard anything different, so.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they do that.
Yeah, because there's, like, a lot. There's what were Chuck and Ned's fathers doing on the backs of camels with the creepy guy? Like, why do those lockets matter?
Yeah.
And those are just a few. So yeah, hopefully what they were trying to do is they were trying to wrap up a few things in these two episodes. They probably could have done more per episode, but at least we got the daughter relationship and Olive sticking up for herself, I guess. So even though it's probably going to be like a normal episode, I'm thinking, possibly, is there anything, any predictions you have other than possibly Ned's dad for the finale? Like
being a super secret agent.
Being a super secret agent. Like, oh, Ned accidentally touches Chuck. Oh no.
Oh my god, that would be the worst finale ever. Ever. Oh my god. No, let's not have that happen.
Okay.
All right. I don't know. I kind of hope that Emerson's daughter comes back, that maybe there's a little bit more, because that was not an ending to that story. That was literally like
Band-Aid.
I wouldn't even call it a Band-Aid, because he saw her and that was it. They're basically back to where he was before, where he doesn't know where she is and he's still looking for her. I mean, it didn't really solve anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Lila hasn't changed as a person at all. So that's it. And I feel like to give us some satisfaction, they have to bring her back. And I don't know if that means that like Lila would have to go to jail, or if she would have to do a complete 180, or if Emerson would have to steal his daughter back, or whatever. But I really hope to see Penny in the finale. I would like to see more Olive and Randy Mann, because I feel like he really needs to continue to play a role at the forefront of the show to help Olive get over Ned. And I would like, I don't know, I would like some sort of thing between Ned and Chuck as well, because I feel like they've been kind of stagnant for a little while. They obviously have feelings for each other, but can't really do anything about it. And I'd like to see something happen where maybe Ned realizes he, I don't even know if this could happen at this point in one episode, but he realizes that he knows a way to not kill people again after he's already brought them back to life. Like, that would be amazing, but who knows?
I really like that. Yeah. I would really like that. What do I want? I want the last episode to not be a cookie cutter mystery of the week episode. So that's not really a prediction. It's just a selfish want, because I'm sure the listeners know, and I'm sure they probably don't like me very much, and I'm sorry, and that's fine. But I haven't been the biggest fan of this show the whole time we've been doing it, but I am starting to warm up to it a little bit with the overarching thing. And I want to end on a good note. I want to be satisfied, possibly with being unsatisfied with the ending, you know, like if I didn't feel some sort of dissatisfaction with the end of the show, I would be really sad with myself and disappointed. So I want to end on a good note. I want the last episode to have all of the characters that we've come to love, like both of the aunts, possibly both of the dads, Simone, like any little big person that we've come across, like in the episode. I want to see them possibly working together. Maybe something big happens in the town or at the pie hole. It's not really a prediction. It's just a selfish wish, I guess.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, I really want the aunts to know that Chuck's alive. I think that would be really important for the finale episode.
I want that too. I do. It's a good one.
I don't think that, you know, when a show gets canceled, you can't be 100% satisfied with how it ends, because it got cut off too early, and they purposely, writers most of the time, lay threads and hints as to what could happen, you know, a season or two down the road, and so you can't wrap up everything. But I think there are, at this point, plenty of large enough plot lines, like Ned's father, like the aunts, that you need those to be wrapped up so that when people watch the last episode, they don't absolutely hate it.
Yes. I agree with that. All right. I have no more predictions. I just kind of want to watch it and see what happens. And hopefully I won't be devastated, but at the same time, hopefully I will, because then that means I like the show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to feel something, even if it's pain.
Yes, exactly. So let's move into our favorite scenes for this episode. Karen, please go first.
Emerson Codd loves his daughter so much.
That's true.
I didn't see
that until now.
I probably already talked about it for a solid 5 minutes, but that point in the diner when you see him actually get angry about everything that's been going on with his daughter, there's so much emotion on his face that it almost made me cry. Like, he cares so, so much.
Yeah. I like that too. My favorite scene was the dam lady, and it's the lady who works in the dam. I'm not saying that she's a dam lady, but maybe she is a dam lady. Talking about mind-altering drugs, changing people into zombies, because finally someone in this show shows some kind of sense at all. Like, she's talking about how there are drugs or some sort of, like, chemicals in the water, and if people drink them, they'll turn crazy and not like themselves and turn into zombies. And I'm just sitting here thinking, the drops in the pies. Like,
oh my god, yeah.
It's not even a notable scene, but it was for me, because at least this lady is saying, like, things in the things that you ingest could be changing you. Like, thank you, lady. Thank you very much.
Oh, man. I loved her because she had this really sweet demeanor and her voice was really high and she looked all grandmotherly. And then she was like, no, there are going to be zombie people. And it was amazing.
Yes, exactly. It was so, I wasn't expecting it to come out of her mouth. It was great. Would you please grace us with your favorite line?
Sure. This one's from Simone, and it's when she says, when someone backs you into a corner, you don't get obedient. You bite back. And although I don't necessarily agree with this, I mean, it's not a bad outlook on life, but it's kind of violent. I feel like it's really appropriate for her, and I just love how angry she got on behalf of Emerson. You could just tell how much she really cares about him.
Yes. And again, this says a lot about her character, and it's really nice to have these sort of one-liners that give you insights when we've been looking for character development in other people for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, this is perfect. This is what I like. My favorite line comes from Emerson, and he was talking to Lila, I think, who had stormed into his office, and he goes, well, just because it was a jar doesn't change the fact that it was a door before it was a jar, which would indicate to most people to a knock before entering.
He's so good. I love the way he talks. It's just perfect.
Like, I couldn't even write this down while he was saying it because it was so twisty and I had to look it up after.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of their lines are like that. They're so rapid fire and they're just tongue twisters and it's amazing, but it does sort of like knock you back sometimes, like, wait, what the heck did they just say?
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like he has the most of those and it's wonderful. All right, so those were our favorite scenes and favorite lines. Before we go, we want to hit on some listener feedback because we got a few really good pieces of feedback. One of them that brings back the sperm debate, which 3 episodes in a row on that one. I'm kind of excited for it. I wasn't on any of them, but I would listen at work and I would just kind of like try not to make any sort of faces at work. Really hard.
That had to have been, yeah, really, really difficult.
So if you would, again, if you'd like to contact us, like these people who we're about to tell you about, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. I'm always looking on the Twitter. I have the notifications sent to my phone. So come chat on Rewatchable. And you can comment on this post on Hypeable, where I will also be watching. I'm just watching you everywhere. So if you're comfortable with that, come talk to us.
That was not creepy at all.
No, not at all. And if you do like us enough to leave us a review on iTunes, that would be great. We would love to have a big Rewatchable family who will not only kind of chat with us about each individual show, but maybe stick with us for each show that we do. I know Mitch kind of let it slip last week, but we officially announced it on our Twitter today. But the next show that we're going to be doing is, oh my God, what is it called? Avatar The Last Airbender. That is what it is called. So if you like that, if you think you're going to like that, or maybe if you'd like to just try it out because you don't know if you're going to like that, you know, watch it with us and leave us a review on iTunes. So then maybe some people who like that show will find us as well. That's kind of where I was getting with this whole long-winded speech. So I'm going to stop talking. And Karen, would you like to get that first comment that is not me?
Sure. This is from MJ Tadros, and they say, if you guys watch the Pushing Daisies panel at PaleyFest, they answer a lot of your past questions. Fuller stated that Ned is a vegetarian because if he ate meat, it would indeed come back to life, that his sperm would most likely kill Chuck's eggs, so they could probably never have kids, and he heavily implied that Chuck would probably never age, just like Digby. The panel is streaming on Amazon Prime and won't spoil anything at this point because it was filmed between seasons 1 and 2. I think that is super interesting. Thank you so much for telling us that. I really want to check out this panel now because I feel like, I don't know. You know, it sucks that they got, that the show ended so soon because I feel like Ned's powers are mysterious to him, so they kind of have to be mysterious to us, but it's mm-hmm. a little frustrating that we can't have more answers like this, you know, throughout the series. So it's a bummer that we had to end at season 2, but this is cool that they were able to, like, shed some light on maybe how it all works.
This is, we'll have definitely have to check it out. And then my piece of listener feedback is from Chuck Ned Fangirl. They also wrote into us at Hypeable. They say, the saran wrap is not creepy. That's the only way they can kiss. Come on. Come on, Taryn.
I was the one that said it wasn't creepy.
Oh, that's
creepy.
Right. That's right. I'm sorry.
Like, what? Don't yell at me.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Love fest. We're having a love fest. I'm sorry. I'm out of line.
Chuck Ned fangirl, I totally agree with you. I think it's super cute. It is the only way that they can kiss. I can understand why the others were having a bit of an issue with it because it's, you know, not very conventional, but you got to work with what you've got, right? So I'm happy with it.
Good. Yes. And my piece of listener feedback was, Karen, I had the same favorite narrator quote as you did, where the narrator was like, oh, hell no.
Oh, my God. It was so funny.
It was so good. And I forgot to tweet it at you. So aww. I thought I would tell you right now because you are right here.
Yes. Thank you.
So yes, that is all that we have for you today. I think it was quite a bit. We will be back next week with our last rewatchable recap episode for Pushing Daisies, which is kind of crazy that we're already at the end.
I know. I feel like we've been with this show for a while, but at the same time, we just started it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how this usually goes. Like, it feels like we've been at it for a while, but once we get to the end, it's all, like, it kind of comes at you all at once. And you're like, wait, but I don't want to leave all these people yet. I want to keep doing this.
I want to keep going. Yeah. So, you guys, listeners, go watch that last episode of Pushing Daisies, and we'll meet you right back here, same time, hopefully, and same place. Find us on Hypeable, find us on iTunes, and download the episode. So until next week, I'm Danielle.
And I'm Karen.
See you later.
Bye, guys. Lila Robinson, a beautiful, wait, grifter? Drift?
Yeah.
Drifter?
It's grifter. It's like, it's like grifter, or it's like drifter, but I think more mysterious slash potentially bad, sort of. I got it from Wikipedia. It's fine.
Okay, I'm going to believe Wikipedia then.
Yes, always believe Wikipedia.